My name is Mohsen Mousavi. I'm one of the co-founders at Blank Moon Games, and at the moment, the head of a studio as well as the creative director. I come from a visual effects background. Prior to Blank Moon, I used to be a visual effects supervisor. I've been in the visual effects industry for about 20 years now, and I have worked at a studio called Scanline before I moved to Blank Moon. Scanline Visual Effects, they're now acquired by Netflix since a few months. Officially Netflix Skyline Visual Effects. And I used to be a visual effects supervisor. I worked on a number of high-profile projects back in the last 10 years at the Skyline, including I was the lead visual effects supervisor on the final season of Game of Thrones, season 8, which we worked directly with HBO on the final three episodes, 4, 5, 6, and episode 5. Brought us an
Nice.
Emmy back in 2009, which was great. And we worked on The Meg, with John Turturro, Warner Brothers. We worked on Independence Day with Roland Emmerich, Sidonarius, and a number of other sort of major projects that was helming at the Scanline. Yeah, so this is my background, coming from a visual effects background, creative management, but also initially I started as an engineer in visual effects, so I have sort of development and sort of engineering background in the field of simulations, crowd effects, dynamics. And sort of made my way through and became a visual effects supervisor.
Yeah,
That's
impressive.
cool.
Yeah, here, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah. I'll give you a nutshell version. So I picked up 3D tools and the whole 3D pipeline at quite an early age. In my early teens, I was playing a game called Second Life, which kind of allowed me to pick up 3D tools and start creating content in the game. I had thousands of people, other players that would buy my stuff or buy the experiences that I was creating. So that was really neat to be able to create something and to be able to sell it and find a following that is actually willing to pay for what you're providing them. And from there, I kind of actually switched into film production for a while. I was a casting director for about 4 years, mostly doing extras casting, background casting, and then I actually switched back into visual effects. So it was something that I got to learn from some really great mentors in the industry, people like Justin Holt. I went to a school here called in Vancouver, Canada, called Think Tank, a great school, and got to learn from the very best. And I jumped into a few different projects. My first visual effects project was Final Fantasy Kingsglaive. I was a lighting artist for that, and I got to work as a generalist at Scanline, where I met Mohsen. So Mohsen was actually my boss there. He was the visual effects supervisor on Game of Thrones, and that was sort of one of the pinnacles of my visual effects experience before jumping back into games, which is what I'm doing now. But all around, I think what's really interesting for me is I saw Mohsen also working on his own game, on the side as a hobby, and I thought, well, this is really cool and neat, and I love games. I've kind of done a little bit of that previously. I want to work on a bigger game. I've been a big gamer myself, so it was just natural for me to fall in love with jumping into the games industry again. And what was nice about it is I realized all of the tools and the skills that I had learned in the past decade all translate almost one to one. And so that was very rewarding, and it has been rewarding so far.
Cool. From what I've gathered, like Mohsen has possibly the greater VFX experience, and you have the bigger game experience. So is that how has that played off each other? Because obviously at Scanline, Mohsen was senior to you, but now you're partners. So you've kind of you're using your additional gaming experience.
I mean, I've never worked in the games industry professionally at a studio level. I've always done it from at home level and kind of having a community that follows me and doing it that way. Have I understood what gamers want better as a result? Probably. I think better than some executive at a big game studio that might be a little bit more detached from the lower level what players are actually looking for. So that's helped me a lot. But yes, so Mohsen obviously comes from a completely different caliber of work in visual effects than I do. I actually got to learn from him a lot of the skill sets that I use today. And Mohsen's a tough cookie. You can't get anything past him without it being done right. it's been a really rewarding experience to do something and do these larger projects. So we got one project in-house that is sort of a smaller project, and we got one that's a much larger project that we're planning. And it honestly, it's not something that you can just jump in and do. You need years of experience in project management with, you know, hundreds of people having worked on projects and how to bring them together cohesively to build something. So Mohsen has that experience, and I continue to learn from him every day.
And if I may chime in here, is that, yes, you know, bigger caliber, but at the same time, you know, the bigger project that we're working on, this is Hugh's IP, is something that has been his passion project for many years before we even started the Blink Mode. So, and he was able to sort of, take us through the water and talk to all of the interesting parties and secure the funding, which is very important. I mean, these days, passion to the side and ambitious to the side, if you don't have the funding, you can't really do much, right? So this is his IP, and of course we were lucky enough to know each other, and we're now collaborating. Titles to the side, and who does what to the side. You know, we come from years of knowing each other at various different levels, and I think that is very important when you're funding a studio. I think that relationship and that trust that comes with, we have worked together before, yes, in a different setup. But I give him a lot of credits for basically securing the funds and being able to put this together so we can basically build a product together.
And it's a big leap, right? So, yeah. I mean, obviously, you're effectively, you're a startup, and you've gone from a fairly well-established studio and a certain amount of stability. So tell us about that jump.
Yeah. No, I mean, visual effects has been very exciting. Very, very interesting. I always tell the story. I come from Iran, same as Hugh, initially. And, you know, when I was 13, I watched Independence Day 1. And I watched Jurassic Park. And, I literally was telling everyone that I will work with the same guy. Roland Emmerich was the icon, at the time. But it was, if you would tell me back in the days you would go to moon one day, I would believe it more than, doing what I'm doing now, right? But I ended up 20 years later, 25 years later, work with the man himself on the Independence Day 2, right? So a lot of hard work has gone into it. And I think at Scanline and Visual Effects, yes, I was very comfortable there and we were working on some amazing projects. But what I was really hungry for was to produce content all the way through, not only in the visuals, because that's what happens in visual effects, that you're not involved necessarily in the writing, you're not involved in the music, you're not involved in the casting, you're not involved in a lot of the content that goes around it, right? You're involved in something very interesting, the visual effects and the visuals and the world building. Absolutely. Very, very amazing. And we enjoyed doing that for the past 20 years. But my ambition was to create content from A to Z, right? And being a gamer myself, and as Hugh mentioned, I started building a video game on the side, which is, it turned out to be quite advanced for doing it on the side as I was doing projects like The Meg and, Game of Thrones, with sometimes 90 hours a week workload that I had on the Scanline side. I still was doing this game on the side. And it turned out to be quite something. So it really proved that there's a lot of, to me, that I have a lot of, that there's a lot more I could do than just focusing on the visuals, right? So we were waiting for a right opportunity, and this was the right opportunity to be able to put together a team and build a project from ground up that both has the gaming side, but also relies big time on cinematics, story, character building, world building. And that's something that Hugh can talk more about, is that we're not just trying to build a game that is fun, but we are going to utilize our visual effects and the movie history and the love for telling the stories, right? We're always in the backstage of telling the stories, right? We're always sort of helping someone else tell the story, and now trying to be at a position where we can basically take our own story and, work with the composers, with the writers, with the game designers, and, bring a whole product.
Would you say that your past experience in Pipeline has been quite beneficial with setting up a new
studio. Absolutely. Hey, this is another true story. Many of my colleagues, knowing that I came from Iran and I really had no reason to be where I am here, right? from where I was born and grown, because it was very tough to do anything related to animation and visual effects. They always ask, what was the biggest thing that helped you in life, right? And I said, I studied music. I graduated as a concert pianist. And that made me to be able to do visual effects. Not to get into the detail, but that's what I owe my career the most for. That, you know, learning music and being so disciplined and really playing 14 hours a day just to be able to, and practicing 14 hours a day for a decade, you know. So same thing here, that even though the gaming side is very different than visual effects, there is a lot in the visual effects that we have learned in the past 20 years that will apply to the video game. Not necessarily the video game mechanics, I think that's new to us, and the design, you know, and so on and so on. But when it comes to, as I said, managing a large volume of work, you know, I have worked with teams of up to 400 people across multiple facilities, multi-million dollars projects, and you really get involved on not only planning it, you get involved in handling the client, you get involved on the pipeline side, you get involved in the creative, you get involved on making sure that you can hit the target with the numbers that you have. So it's an all-around position of VFX supervisor that I think it really makes you well-equipped for building the product. That could be anything, to be honest, right? It could be a game, could be a software, could be... I'm not saying you have everything in place, you still need to learn and grow, but I think understanding how to manage quantity and how to manage volume and how to work with creatives and tech technicians and engineers and producers, that gives us a huge head start. So we're not, even though we're a startup, we're not just learning how to do projects. You know, we have done many of them in the past 20 years. This is another.
I guess the question I'd have for both of you is about your own games that you developed. Before we get onto the big games you're doing, it'd be very interesting to see the game you developed on the side, Motion, and Hugh, the kind of the sort of games you were developing in Second Life and since then.
So I'll start. Well, Second Life, it's its own sort of social, I wouldn't even call it a game, it's just sort of a social platform, which allows you to, you know, either be the player or be a content creator. So you can choose this. I imagine sort of, I don't know if you've played it, but if you haven't, it's kind of like The Sims, but an online version where you have your own character and you can be anything you want. What was interesting there is all the tools from an engineering perspective, I didn't have to, care for. It was already there. It was a large community already existing there as well. What I really had to care for was creating content, and creating content both from sort of my own ideas and what I thought was going to be interesting, but also listening to what the community is looking for and finding out little niches of, well, everybody's kind of feeling like, you know, something medieval this time, or people like sci-fi today, and what part of sci-fi, you know, what about sci-fi is interesting, and what is the flavor of the month or the year? And so doing that, I actually did that for about 3 to 4 years, I would say, and I learned a lot about just listening to an audience and listening to what their responses are to the content that you output, and adjusting your strategy and adjusting what you're doing. There's actually been, if you go and do your research on it, there's been millionaires made from that game. People who just started creating content and they maybe had a clothing brand or had a HUD brand or whatever that is. And, they, you know, there's been very successful people on Second Life. Actually, the world's first virtual millionaire was made on Second Life. It was someone named Anshi Chung, who basically rented land. So she was a virtual landlord, so to speak. She would buy server space and sell it to others. And so there's all this very weird, innovative thing at the time. And everyone's talking about Web3 and metaverses today. And I mean, this stuff has been around. It's not necessarily anything new. It's all sort of a new angle of viewing it, and technologies that have updated now in order to be able to do it better. So yeah, that I haven't made a game to this date from scratch. The game that we're working on right now is a project that I've been really carefully crafting the story and the background and the characters for. So I've kind of acted as the creative director for that. And what I want to do is, having come from competitive games like League of Legends or Overwatch and all these very popular games that have found an audience through the last decade, right? If you think about League of Legends, well, people fall in love not just with the game, but about the culture and the story and the universe that you can get lost into. And that's sort of what I aim to do with the franchises that we build under Blink Moon, is really find the story that a player can get lost into, but also find that franchise opportunity that you can expand that story for the next 5-10 years. So that's my goal, and our goal at Blink Moon as a whole.
Great. I'll add to that. So in 2015, I believe 2015, we watched a documentary called Indie Game. You may have seen it. It's I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. If you haven't watched it, please go watch it. And that was it. I watched the documentary and was, oh my God, you can make a game alone these days? That's even possible? So I downloaded Unreal Engine. And that was a time where the version 4 was just released as a free version, right? That you could actually get, and they made it free, right? It was in the same time, month or week. So I downloaded it and I started learning like every weekend. And I was literally doing at the time 70, 80 hours a week. Already visual effects, right? I think I was working on San Andreas when this happened, either between San Andreas and Independence Day. But I was amazed that this thing even exists. So downloaded it and I started learning. And there was a project I started working on based on the genre I play the most, tactical stealth game. So I started basically learning the engine and on the engineering side and on the game design side. And with Blink and I, 4 years later, I had a product you could play for 10 hours. So we went and approached publishers. And luckily enough, we had some really world-class publishers that saw a lot of value to the project. And based on my background, we were able to attach a lot of, large caliber artists, from writers to composers to voiceovers, to the project that, gave us even more credibility. And we went all the way to secure some major publishing deals. But we were lucky enough again that Blink Moon came around, and we decided to sort of self-produce and self-publish the game, and so that's what we're doing right now. We're taking that IP and Hugh's IP and under what umbrella, and sort of designing what we want to design without a gun to our head, if that makes sense, right?
So the IP that you're developing at Blink Moon is based on your own previous IP that you've been developing independently.
That's right.
I was just curious about just going forward. What do you think is next for you guys?
I can just quickly give a little insight on this. I actually got out of a publisher call this morning, and the conversation is always, how does visual effects merge with games? What is it that, and when you look at a game like Kena, Bridge of the Spirits, this was a predominantly visual effects team, and they focused on what they were good at, which is the VFX part. I think you're going to start seeing teams that are really a combination of visual effects and games coming together. When COVID hit, virtual production became this big buzzword, and everybody's trying to get into it. Well, that's interesting, because what it does is it naturally over time allows artists to get into the gaming side through engines like Unreal. Unity just came out with their tech demo. It looks amazing, right? And they're using technologies like Ziva and basically using a lot of the tools that happen to be used in visual effects. And obviously Unity doing sort of an acquisition of the Weta tech team, this is even louder, right? This is happening already. So I think there's going to be a point where we've always said, games and movies are coming closer and closer. But I think what's really happening is the technologies are going to come so close that it's just inevitable at the end of the day. And it's I think it's already happening. It's very close already. So I'm excited for Unreal Engine 5. I'm excited for real-time rendering in a way that, you know, working even 6-7 years ago, even 5 years ago, really, I was not able to get that fidelity for at least a few hours watching my frames render for so long. And now you can just get it on the spot and it's good and you can change something and you're, you know, obviously hardware dependent, but you're ready to go. And that's exciting to me because the further the technology gets and the further that artists become acclimated to that technology, the more creative we can actually become, right? Because then it's less about, oh, let me figure out what my frame issues are and why this frame dropped and you know, et cetera. And it becomes more about, what is the best lighting angle, or what is the story that we're trying to tell? Let's focus on that, really. So that's exciting to me, and being able to tell these stories faster, better, easier, and with what seems, you know, in the past would have taken a much larger team. You know, you can have smaller teams do these beautiful, amazing experiences. So that's I think some input
and
on that.
If I may come in and add on that, if that's okay. So if you look into the film, cinematography has been around for hundreds of years, right? In film, you know, and when you look at let's say this year we watched Dune and we watched The Power of Dog, and you see these beautiful images. You know, the people involved, they don't have different tool sets than the other films that didn't look as good, right? They have the same cameras, you have the same posts, you have, but it really comes down to the art of cinematography. And you don't know how many games I've played that I wondered that it's amazing gameplay, it's really fun, but I can clearly see that they have missed on that part, right? That they have big time missed not having that experience. So I think cinematography hasn't been a key tool in the video game, maybe recently, right? But it's not necessarily the number one. You don't necessarily hire a cinematographer on a video game, you know. But I think moving forward, since, as you mentioned, that VR, the line is getting blurrier, you have visual effects artists with a visual effects background and film background working on game, and vice versa. You have video game artists going now working on virtual production. I think that aspect of cinematography, that aspect of understanding camera move, light, color, and how to communicate through the image. You know, and that's why you have a cinematographer, right? That's why a film like The Power of Dog looks different. And that's why a game like, let's say, Kena Bridge of the Spirit, you know, looks so amazing because these guys, even though it's not from a gameplay mechanic, it's a very normal game, nothing special about it. But from a visuals and the cinematics, it's one of the best I've seen in the past 10 years. And it really comes because they valued a lot the cinematography aspect of the game, and you know, the camera move, light, color, and everything was right. So I think that is what's going to happen more in the following years.
I think that's really interesting because, I mean, obviously you've got a certain amount of setup time in games, but you also have your cinematography. And I mean, you can almost say like how a DOP might have to set up a crane or dolly, get the gaffer to build the lights and set up the scene. You've got a similar setup in Unreal where you've got to get all your assets in place. But just like the cinematographer, once you got there, you can do another take very quickly. And of course, no one's going to kick you off the location in Unreal. So you've got that advantage. But I think there's definitely, you're getting to a more similar workflow. Whereas obviously as a lighter, it's a bigger deal. Moving the camera can often mean, you know, it can be very long, it can be very slow. And so those delays, but you can't just do multiple takes very quickly. And I was working on compositing a spot that was using Unreal renders, and I did find, obviously, I had less passes and less controlling comp, but I could kick stuff back to lighting and get another version like that, and that was quite interesting. It was quite an exciting way of working.
Right.
I was going to ask, well, obviously we're going to post links in our description, but where can people find your content and games?
So we haven't actually released anything. We're quite early in our startup. Blinkmoon.com is our website. So we will eventually have some content you can go out and find there. We're working pretty stealthily right now. We're having conversations with a number of publishers and typically in games, you know, and I think in film as well, you don't want to release anything until everything's locked and loaded. So we haven't really put much out there. But yeah, happy to release content and get back to you guys even on a future round and once we've actually released something and show you guys what we've been working on.
Yeah, I mean, we'd even like to see, you know, some of, obviously, your Motions independent game is out and some of your Second Life stuff is still around, still available to find.
Probably not. This is very old stuff now, yeah. You'd have to really go digging for it at this point in the game itself to find it.
But yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting field. And I'm also interested, Moshe, can I ask, when you saw Unreal, you didn't immediately jump, like most people in VFX who jump on Unreal, they immediately jump to thinking, how could I use this in VFX? You just, like, I'm making a game. So I think that was...
No, in contrary. Like, already in 2015, you know, because I was very involved on the visual effects side on the how-tos. How do we approach everything, right? And that was my background, to not just be a creative visual effects supervisor, but to also be an innovator, to innovate how we do what we do, right? If it was a crazy environment, a new technology, and when we did Meg, we were using Ziva Dynamic for the first time in a blockbuster film ever. And that's us basically bringing them on board to figure out how to do Meg, the most amazing dynamic creature that Scanlan has done. I have been exploring it since the day one. Of course, I didn't have the knowledge, and the industry didn't have the perception yet of what it is. It wasn't easy to convince people. But the further we went, the further it became a thing. You know, already in 2019, you know, we had a division at the Skyline to look into it big time, and I was one of the main stakeholders of advising on how to approach, and on the engineering side and on the technical side. So I was really lucky enough that I learned Unreal Engine in and out in the past 7 years, right? Really lucky, because by the time it became a thing in visual effects, it sort of became a gold mine, right? I knew the tool very well.
Yeah.
I knew the tool. My boss was very surprised. One day I came to say, I know the whole tool really well. It's like, how do you know all of this? It's like, well, I've been building this game for the past, you know, 7 years now, right? So it was actually very instrumental in my past 2 years in the visual effects, having that experience.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm just curious about, in terms of having worked in visual effects, and usually you're always having to deliver photoreal content, are you looking to output your games maybe in a photorealistic resolution, or are you trying to...
I think maybe I can take that. Is that we are, of course, going to utilize all of the latest technologies in Unreal Engine 5. You know, I'm sure you have seen material that you know, is out there, you know, Nanite and Lumen, and a lot more to come down the road. However, what we are exploring is an aesthetic and visual that is not overused. I think the idea of Unreal Engine 5 and the absolute cinematic photoreal is already overused, if you ask me, you know, because it's doable. So what we refer to as photoreal is that the way the light behaves, the way the material and the shaders are built, are photoreal. But visually, we're not trying to produce, in the games that we're working right now, we're not trying to produce a photoreal image. If you look at Disney and Pixar, for example, the way they have built their product in the past, especially the past 2-3 years, there's some mind-blowing, amazing images that they feel photoreal, but yet they don't look like the real thing. You know, that means the light behaves photoreal, the surface characteristics are photoreal, you know, the fur looks very photoreal, but yet it is in a sort of, the static of the visuals are, I don't want to call it cartoony, but the stylized, you know, they're not necessary. You can't compare it one-to-one to a photoreal film, right? So that's what we are going for, that it is following all of the photoreal aspects from an engineering point of view, from the way the light moves, the way your shaders are, the way your fur is, but yet it is living in a stylized world. I guess you'll know more about it once we have released our first round of, you know, images of what we are cooking right now.
Yeah.
What are your biggest influences visually?
I've played games like Monster Hunter World, and I loved it. It was a sort of, at its time, I mean, if you go look at the prototype that they released before the game was out, you know, very early in their progress, it was amazing. I saw that and I was like, wow, you can really feel like you're in this world, and these AI sort of dinosaurs or beasts or whatever you're fighting are very, you know, they feel very real. And I ended up playing the game when it did come out, and I was very much happy with the results from where they went from a prototype to the final release of the game. And so games like that has definitely inspired what we're working on. You know, again, on the flip side, again, I've played League, Overwatch, Dota, you know, I've played a lot of competitive games like that, that are sort of the hero shooters as well. And it's what I really like about games is their ability to bring people together, whether that's online or even if it's a single player. I often see people talking about their experiences in that single player game, and how they overcame that boss or how they overcame that challenge. And so things like that are very interesting to me. And I would say those are probably titles that have inspired what we're working on right now.
And are, because obviously, Motion, you were talking a lot about cinematography. Do you have influences in terms of films or animations that have inspired your aesthetic for the games?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been a big fan of Star Wars, especially the last three of them, you know, and J.J. Abrams and, you know, everything he stands for. Yeah, that has been, and from the story point and the vibe and the mood, all the way to the music, you know, the project I worked on was heavily inspired by Star Wars, yes.
Can I chime in quickly? I'm just wondering what are some of the challenges that you're facing lately, be recruiting talent or technological issues?
Sure.
You want to take this one, Wilson?
I mean, it is a very competitive market, and we are in the process of, you know, bringing in the talent. And because we are aiming for the stars, we want to make sure that we're bringing in the absolute top-notch, what I like to call them, the sort of the ninjas or the rock stars, you know, that they can come in and they can. And we have been very lucky to be able to find some of these rock stars, you know, using leveraging of our backgrounds and the credibility that we have based on what we have been involved in the past 20 years. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a challenge because, you know, we have made a lot of good progress, you know, but I can see why today a video game is startup, without having that credibility, we'll have a really hard time, you know, finding the talent, you know, because you need to be able to convince, again, the rock stars that you have a great stadium for them to perform, you know. You have a great, you know, stage for them to come and shine, right? And I think we have been able to provide that stage.
You know, some things you can toss money at and hope they go away. I don't think this is one of them. You can't necessarily just toss money into some of the greatest talent around the world and say, hey, come join us. Because they're looking to work on really neat things. They're not just going to go work on anything. So that is the challenge for a lot of startup studios, is to be able to attract that talent. I mean, you know, the budgeting, everything is important, but again, having that caliber of work that you represent as a core team is what provides the playground for other people within that caliber to come in and bring their skills to the table.
So what is your team makeup at the moment?
We are, you know, we were about 3 to 4 people a few weeks ago. We've grown to about 13, quickly. Predominantly on the creative side is where a lot of the talent in Blinkwin is right now. We're actually bringing in someone who's like a head of CG at an existing visual effects studio. That I've, you know, had the pleasure of working with previously, and they're very good what they do. So we're bringing in people from the visual effects side. We're bringing in people, you know, one of our artist that we're working with right now was actually an artist on the ancient demo in Unreal. And so, you know, people, we're bringing in people who've done things before and that are recognizable. We're pretty art heavy right now, and we're now jumping into the tech side to hire engineers. And that's probably a bigger challenge, to be honest, because, you know, we have the Rolodex on the visual effects side and on the art side. The engineering side is a little bit more challenging because it's especially, you know, you have to kind of tailor that towards the game development side. But even with that, we're realizing people are wowed by what we've done in the past. And so they're much more amicable to exploring an opportunity over, you know, another startup. So that's been an unfair advantage that we've noticed for sure. And we've utilized it to bring in some really amazing people.
I guess the other question is, when you're producing VFX, I mean, I kind of get the schedule is usually you've got your assets, you've got a certain amount of waiting on the client side of dealing with their edit, but then you've obviously got your shots. So the breakdown is your assets and your shots. With the game, obviously, assets, I guess, is quite similar, but what's the other part of your breakdown in terms of the schedule for producing?
I think the biggest difference is the how you manage just the methodology itself. So in visual effects, usually when you get involved in the post, things are clear. You still need to design and figure things out, but things are clear. So what you do is that you come up with what you call a waterfall schedule. Right? That means you have a milestone, you have a deadline, the budget is usually pretty clear to the cent, right? And you know how many assets you have, how many shots you have, how many sequences you have. It will fluctuate as you go. Shots get omitted, sequence get added, they're going to reshoot. But usually you go from you basically manage it on a waterfall level, right? You schedule the whole thing day one or in the first 2 months, you schedule about 14 months of production, and then you go, you balance, you adjust, but you have a very clear mind of where you want to be in 5 months. So that's visual effects. Very predictable, I would say, right? In the process in making a game is more like developing the software. And I'm sure you have heard of agile methodologies. And, mm-hmm. and I would say the game, especially in the first 30%, it's a very agile process, meaning that you're not creating a set expectation exactly that in 2 months at the beginning, you're going to have A, B, C, and D, because you're producing a product from scratch. It's like the writer that is trying to explore the genre, and the writer is trying to explore the base of the story, you know? So it's a lot of agile, meaning that we basically prototype everything from the writing to the style to I'm not saying it's a three genre, but sometimes even, you know, you get to the level of what genre is the best for the IP that we're trying to figure out, right? Should it be RTS? Should it be a third person? Should it be a first person? Should it be a mix of all, you know? And when we get into the mechanic, you know, what is the most exciting thing about our game? Is that the boss fight? Is that the mechanic, the way it jumps around in the game? Is that what is it that makes us different from the other 60 titles that are similar, right? And that goes through an agile methodology. You don't have a set schedule of exactly what happens every day for the next 6 months. You keep it open because you want to give this option of creativity to everyone, right? You don't want to tie their hands that you have to figure out exactly, you know, this in the next 3 days. Otherwise, you know, in visual effects is different. In visual effects, you set a date, so your layout needs to be done by then, you know, and the client expecting it, the studio is expecting it, everyone is expecting it to be done. Sometimes things fluctuate, go up and down, but you are sort of operating in a more predictable way, if that makes sense. So I think that is the biggest difference, mindset, in between video game development and, you know, when you're working in visual effects.
Do you think there comes a point where you are beyond that agile setup and you are similar to the VFX schedule where you're just...
Yeah, so once you pass that first milestone, once you have passed the sort of, you know, what we like to say, the game design, and, you know, you're trying to figure out what to do, it would be equivalent to now you have wrote the movie, you have shot the movie, right? So once you get to the same level, then now you have an idea, you have written what you want, you have tested, you know what genre, you know what a scope you have, you know what type of assets you want to have. You have explored enough, now you can sort of slightly transition from a sort of an agile methodology into a waterfall methodology, right? These are your milestones. This is what you want to hit. And I think the more you go, the more it becomes a more predictable scenario. Now, that being said, in visual effects, when we design the pipeline and when we design software, you know, you have that as well, right? And that's always an agile process. So visual effects itself is on a waterfall level, always, right? But on the, when you design a pipeline, with Houdini pipeline, an Unreal Engine pipeline, whatever pipeline that you're trying to do in visual effects, it follows the practices that you have in software engineering, which is today, again, 20 years ago, it was also waterfall, right? You would design a software for 2 years precisely, but not anymore. Now, you know, everyone is utilizing the agile methodology to be able to sort of adapt the development based on what you find out in the next 2 months, instead of trying to lay it out precisely for the next 2 years, right?
Do you think there are any aspects of actual VFX that could adopt the agile methodology, or do you think it's inappropriate in the VFX?
Yeah, I mean, we do that as well in visual effects. So let's say, even though we go and set up a whole waterfall, it's like, okay, great, your animation needs to be done, or the layout needs to be done within the next 3 months, all of the shots. So when we get to figure out the layout in those 3 months, usually you do a lot of agile, right? Meaning that unless you have a perfect previs from the client and you know exactly what they want, you know, but often you have some sequences that you have an idea from the client, but you have the sort of creative hat to go and figure it out. So the exploration of figuring out a sequence from scratch, from a layout or previs standpoint, or figuring out a look of a sequence, that exploration is very agile. You know, you wish to finish it within 3 months, right? But you don't, you can't schedule it. You can't say by tomorrow, I need to have the look figured out, because the chances that is not. So what do you do then? You know, what do you do then? So sometimes, you know, the bigger the budget, the more important the project is, these milestones can shift. That means you have to finish it within this time, you know, and sometimes the smaller the budget, because we just don't have any additional budget to spend, right? We say, whatever we're going to get in 2 weeks, we're going to go for that, right? And that's why you see smaller projects, they don't look as good sometimes, because they had to pull the plug and pause. And the larger the project is, you know, you can go, I'll give you an example. When we did Game of Thrones season six, we worked on season eight, and episode six, that was a throne melt sequence. And that throne melt sequence, we started it week first, you know, and we delivered it as one of the last thing we delivered. So we literally worked on that sequence for over 16 months, you know. Not that it was constantly in process, you know, and yes, we had a waterfall plan to finish it in a much shorter time, you know, but because it was such an important moment, not that what we had at the beginning wasn't good, but because it was such an important moment that we wanted to explore what else could it be, you know? So give you an example. But...
And I guess the client, often is sort of following an agile method. In the sense of, I mean, if you think of a Marvel movie where they've got their friends and family screenings and they're changing sequences. So even if as a vendor, you're following a waterfall method, you've got a client who's quite possibly being quite agile.
That is very well. I mean, you mentioned with the screening, you know, you sort of show the film or you write the film, you have people read it and then they give you feedback. You go and change everything, you know, and then you won't stop till you're really happy with it. The bigger the franchise, the bigger the IP, the more financial backing up you have behind it, then yes. And the same thing, you go and, you know, show the film to an audience and say, okay, we have to reshoot now. We have to completely reshoot the last final act because we're not happy with it. And this happens very often these days because you have the financial backing. And yes, that is in sometimes they don't know it's the agile methodology. It's sort of that's why agile is interesting, because it's the natural evolution of what it makes sense. As you know, agile is not a sort of a black and white formula that you just adapt, right? Agile is a set of rules that will help you adapt the product based on the feedback, if that makes sense, right?
What's the difference between having an agile plan and not having a plan? Because
having an agile plan and not having a plan. Well, you know, in agile, when not having a plan is disastrous, right? In any scenario, right? And it still happens, you know, even in visual effects, and I'm sure in gaming as well, you know. And that comes with experience, so sort of go on, we'll just make it as we go, right? In agile, you do have a plan. Again, you do have a plan. What you don't do is that you're not putting boundaries around this plan. Waterfall, you say, and again, I come from an engineering background, 20 years ago, you would literally create a plan for a software day to day, And they wanted a producer to be able to do that. It was very important. Go to the Microsoft project and you make a day-to-day plan. You didn't care if the first beta was not Git. If you shipped it and people hated it, you would still go and do the phase two. You would not change anything. Make sense? And say, it doesn't matter. We have a plan. We're going to follow the plan, right? So it took a while to basically bring in the customer and the end user into the whole cycle of development. And that's really what Agile is that you come up with a plan. I think if you're open to adapt anywhere in any planning methodology, you're already doing Agile subconsciously. If you're open to adapt your plan, anywhere in life even, you know, if you wanted to, what I say Agile is that the difference is that Agile is that you say with your family on the weekend, we want to do a road trip, right? On the Agile says, we're going to go to the first destination and we're going to see how the kids feel. You know, how does it feel there? And then we're going to decide if we're going to stay there for 3 days or we want to basically continue to go to the next level. That would be an agile version of it. Your goal is to get to Paris, you know, from Germany to Paris. That's your goal. But how we get there, you're going to basically play it by the ear. You're still going to plan, you know. The waterfall would be that we're going to go to Paris. I don't care what's going to happen in whatever, Berlin, I don't care. I'm going to get into the bus the next day, go to the next city. I don't care if I loved it there. I don't care if my kid got sick. And that's the waterfall where you don't basically adapt based on what is happening. So if that...
And having having no plan, I guess, is just getting in the car and saying, let's figure it out.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. 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 Just... Just a question there for Moisen, I guess as VFX or previous VFX supervisor, you had a lot of responsibilities and you were working long hours, and I guess you're doing the same with Blink Moon as well. I'm just wondering how you manage that as a family man, and how you fit everything in.
That's a question for my wife and my kids. I think everyone in their career, they have this phase of you need to prove yourself. You need to prove yourself to yourself and to everyone else. So you sort of go through and you do the extra mileage to make sure that you know, you're doing due diligence and you're doing justice to the opportunity that is given to you. And that's where I was, I would say, 10 years ago, where I really would go above and beyond. I would have spent 90 hours to make sure that, you know, you have done your part, because anyone else could have had that opportunity. That's how I looked at it, is that I got the opportunity and I'm working in this project. You know, I remember when I did 300 SQL, you know, we joined the Scanlan, that was the first project I did. And that was, to this day, one of the most complex things we have done. It was like 700 crazy water shots that we did. And I don't know how much I slept during that year, you know, it was crazy. But I was sort of this burden of, you have this responsibility, you know, this is an opportunity, an IP that you have the chance of making it shine and making it look good. The same with Game of Thrones. And when we did Game of Thrones, it's like you're finishing the chapter on the biggest franchise in the TV history, right? And it matters. People are going to talk about this In my head, it was like, if you survive and you make it look good, you know, yes, you might be awarded with an Emmy. And if you didn't, you would lose your career. Basically, that was the sort of devil its sort. So I think, you know, I have valued my time a lot. I'm not saying in a bad way, but when the project finished, or when, you know, at 7:30, 8:30, if everyone would go to the bar, right, I would go there as well for 10 minutes and I would head home and spend my 2 hours on learning Unreal Engine and building the game. You know, that's I remember when I showed the trailer to some of my colleagues. So that's what you were doing when we were all having tequila shots. It's like, yes, that's what was happening, right? I was working on this. So it's really self-management and self-time management. And you know, I'm not going to lie that my family has done a big sacrifice the last 10 years to support me, and, you know, doing the film side and now having the game on the side. And I think we're hoping that with Blink Moon, our theory and methodology and philosophy is to really not rely on the overtime and the weekend work. I know everyone says that, but because we come from that background and I've seen it firsthand, and I know Hugh has been himself in that position, to see that it doesn't do good neither to you or to the project. You're going to burn through the money and you're going to burn through the creativity. So that's our philosophy. You know, I think time is going to show how successful we're going to be, you know, to actually really utilize our experience and not to do the same mistakes. We'll find out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cute. Here, sorry. I was just thinking about your decision to give up VFX to then going full on for the gaming industry, because unlike unlike Mohsin, who's like, he's got like massive history of being working in film, I guess the many years of your time in the VFX industry is lesser than his was. So I was just curious about what made you just like not jump ship, but I guess like what
change ship.
What solidified your decision to just give up VFX? And
That's a good question. I think it's you know, one of those questions that requires more insight on, you know, the fact that it is a changing environment, right? And it's, when I jumped into Unreal for the first time, it was at a visual effects company at the beginning of COVID, right? So it was a time where big clients like HBO were like, hey, we need you guys to figure out what we're going to do in this time where we can't really go to set. So go figure it out. And, you know, I was part of a small team that was trying to figure it out in Unreal before. I mean, virtual production is now getting bigger and bigger, but this is sort of when people were really trying to focus in on it in the first few weeks. And I don't think, to be honest, I've really changed industries, because I think I can at any time go back and be a looked of artist in visual effects and still create some incredibly beautiful hero characters. And I try to brush up on my Substance and Maya and all this kind of stuff when I can. In my position now, I talk a lot more to executives at different publishing companies. So it's naturally kind of distanced me from the creative process, and it's become a lot more on the business side. However, I think we need people to go in from the gamer side, go in from the artist side, go in from the sort of experience that I've had, and talk to executives. When I first started talking to executives, you know, at big publishing companies, the first thing I always got was, wow, this is so refreshing. And in my mind, I mean, I've never pitched a game before up to that point. And it was interesting that I was hearing that. And I figured it's because people have done the same approach over and over again. That's what's tried and true and gets the money, but not necessarily always gets the innovation or the product part correctly. So I just went in from what I believe in and what I think is going to be interesting. And obviously I did some market research and this and that to help me. But, you know, I don't think I've necessarily really thought about really jumping out of the visual effects industry. It's been more about, how do I bring my visual effects industry experience into something new that I might not have that experience already? And I think that's actually been one of the biggest factors of our success, is if I had done this from, you know, a decade of gaming experience, there wouldn't have been anything that would have set me apart, actually. So I plan very much to kind of, I have a lot of friends in the visual effects industry. Obviously we're bringing in people predominantly from the visual effects industry and Blinkman already so far. And now we're, you know, attracting more game people as well. But I think that we're going to have a lot of the same things that we did in VFX happening at Blinkmoon, just in a different way, for a different end result, essentially.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, I think with at this particular time, there is an element that any gaming experience is actually, if there's a time for people working in games to want to move into VFX, now is that time, right? You would say more than at any other time in the industry history. I mean, perhaps 10 years ago, it would have been a big, difficult jump, and you might even have to go back in your career. But I think at this point, people can probably not only change careers quite easily, but keep their seniority if you're moving from games to film, which is, you know, is part there. But and business experiences kind of serve you wherever you go, whatever you do.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I mean, these industries are coming so close together that who knows, maybe in 5 years, 10 years, there will just, instead of visual effects studios and game studios, there'll just be creative studios that create content. And there already is. I mean, there already is studios doing that kind of thing, where they produce both cinematics for their games and they produce their own games. And maybe they'll get, you know, if you look at Riot as an example, as a massive company, I mean, they didn't necessarily produce, or they didn't necessarily do the muscle or legwork of Arcane, but Arcane is a animated TV series that everybody loves, right? And it's a big success, and it comes from games. And you're going to see these IPs going from medium to medium, and at the end of the day, the technologies are going to assist in keeping the people slowly become one and the same in the future. So I think there will be, yes, you're right. I think seniority level, you know, there are certain positions on games that you just need to kind of be on the games, and there's certain, you know, visual effects positions you just kind of need to be there to understand it. But I think in the future, you'll start to see a blend, and the lines are going to become more and more blurred.
Can you see your game as a film? Can you see a movie?
Absolutely. Actually, the larger project, I might have mentioned this, but we're, you know, the first thing I did is just create the story. I didn't really care about the game itself or the movie itself. I just wanted the story to make sense. And it deals with all sorts of, you know, global issues that we're facing today, and different things that I see becoming issues in the future as well. And so I first focused on, again, this universe that people can fall in love with. And then from that, then you derive the product and you say, okay, now we want it to be a game, and now we want it to be a animated TV series, or maybe I want it to be a collectible figurine for these characters. And you can go all sorts of, I think they call it transmedia, right? You can kind of go in any shape that you want.
The question we always, you know, throw at the end is always like, what is your advice to people trying to, I guess, thinking of changing, moving into games from VFX?
I think, you know, the reality is, in visual effects, I learned how to learn. And I feel like visual effects is one of those rare industries that you kind of have so many tools that you're given that you can utilize to, I mean, I even did a bit of hardware development, right? Because of 3D modeling and understanding, you know, what pieces can go where, and selling that to distributors. And there was a project I worked on with some friends at the visual effects studio that I was in, where it was sort of this hardware piece. It was the world's first like touchscreen smart home system with wireless charging on top. And it was all because, you know, they knew how to model it and put it together, make it look nice and packaged. And you can create things, right? That's the thing with visual effects and CG in general. You can create things. You're a creator. And I don't think anybody in visual effects that, you know, the games like The Forest, you know, the guy was a lighting artist, and he you know, the guy who made it is a lighting artist originally in visual effects, happened to come up with this story about a plane crash on an island, and has received tons of success from that. Now they're making another version of it. So what I'm trying to say is, it doesn't matter whether you're going into hardware development and creating pieces of hardware, or if you want to get into games, or if you want to get into something that is sort of attached into 3D in itself, I my recommendation to any artist in the visual effects industry is to do what they're passionate about. Like if it's something that's some really interesting to you, do it. If not, if you're doing it just for the sake of doing it, then probably not the best idea. The reason that, you know, I'm getting into gaming personally is because, again, I've been a hardcore gamer. Blink Moon, I'll tell you about the name itself. It's sort of an homage to the fact that I was a hardcore gamer, and so much so that I would wake up and play games all day until the evening. And as soon as I blink, it would already be, you know, evening and the moon would be out. So it's sort of like, you know, you blink and it's suddenly the moon. And being on the computer and that sort of culture of, you know, we live on our computers, essentially. I think it's fine. If you are trying to get into an industry and you're passionate about it, there's nothing holding you back. It's just yourself, right? And for me, I've had to learn so many things beyond visual effects could ever offer in the world of business and in the world of, you know, contracts and legals and, you know, publishing deals and all this kind of stuff. Has nothing to do with visual effects, but I think visual effects gave me the basis the experience to be able to jump into those conversations and say, hey, look, here's what I've got. It's kind of like reporting to your CG soup at the end of the day. And you know, you've got that going. So yeah, I would say, don't be afraid, try new things if you want to, but mostly if it comes from passion.
I'll add to that, so it is today, it's very, very, very doable and achievable to build a game on your own, right? And the old title of indie games, and you know, yes, everyone can download Unreal Engine or Unity and build a game. I must say, I would have been terrified if this was true. And I'll tell you what, because when I started doing my journey, you know, I remember many telling me if this was easy, then everyone would have done it, right? So the more you learn, you say it's very doable, it's very achievable. You can learn the process, you can go through it. It's very, you have the tools that you didn't have 20 years ago, right? But however, every time I realize how difficult it actually is to go through the whole process, there's a difference between I downloaded the engine, learned it over the weekend, and did a little prototype based on tutorial, than making a product and bringing it all the way to a publisher, right? So the more I did, the more I realized how hard it is, the more I get convinced that I'm in the right path. Because you realize that the competition, yes, it's achievable, but it's not a huge competition, because having done it now, I realize that it really takes a lot of expertise to get to that finish line, right? But the further you go, the competition gets less and less and less, which is the good news. So what I'm saying is that very achievable, but do not underestimate it. That doesn't mean because you can get an Unreal Engine copy in Unity, you can build an empire overnight, you know? So it needs a lot of consistency, and it needs a lot of, effort to really, you know, if you have your aim, to not to give up and go with it. It's not an easy process.
Yeah, both Mohsen and I have been working on these IPs for many years at this point. So I agree that it's not an overnight thing. It's very possible, but it's not overnight. And you're going to need to persevere through all those difficult times. And the only thing that's going to keep you going is if you're actually passionate about it. And if you're actually like, okay, no, I want to do this beyond the money. I want to do this beyond the, you know, just trying something new. So yeah, I agree with that.
Is Mohsen doing the music for your upcoming game?
is he doing the music for it? Parts of it,
right?
Yeah,
interesting. One of many talents, I guess.
Very, very cool. Well, I would love to at some point get you back when you have a release, and we do a sort of a follow up, a kind of where are we now with Blink Moon, and you know, it would be great when the, you know, the everything's unwrapped and. And we can talk openly about what this mysterious game is a little bit more. But I think it's been really exciting.
For sure.
We've had a lot of deep insights, which I think are very valid for our listeners. And I think Kofi would agree on that as well.
Yeah.
So, thank you so much for getting in touch and coming on the show.